we're talking about love today. And they've asked me to do this because I'm an expert on the topic. Actually, I'm not. But what is love? A lot of different answers there. And it seems to me love is one of the most used, most liked words out there. People like love. Love is something you can never go wrong with if you give that as your answer. It's the acceptable answer in all circumstances. If someone asks you a question and you say love is the answer, who can disagree with that? Even at weddings where they say they don't want any religion, they might say, but what's that verse in the Bible about love? Can we have that one? Love is always the right answer. I mean, people like love. It's right up there with malls, cell phones, and Netflix. People like love. Yet I can't help but wonder if we all mean the same thing when we talk about love. Do people really like love? Today we come to a controversial figure in Christendom. Opinions about her have split churches, destroyed friendships. Ideas about her and her status have separated people of faith and actually created enemies. She's a catalyzing figure. And I'm talking about Mary, the mother of Jesus. And I would say that this mother, she really did understand what love is. We like love. At least we like some things about love. But Mary challenges us to go beyond love as a feeling of satisfaction, as a description of what something does for us. Mary's love is challenging, and actually it's really uncomfortable. I don't know if I like it. It challenges me deeply. Yet I'm sharing it with you today, hopefully to be a learner along with you. So most of you are probably a bit familiar with Mary, the Christmas story, the manger and the stable. And you might think that I'm a little bit out of season here because it's August, didn't you know, Kevin? It's not Advent yet. But Mary has so much to offer us. And we're going to look at Mary's reaction when she finds out that she's going to become pregnant with the Messiah, who will reign over Israel forever, whose kingdom will have no end, and raise him as her son. She gets that news from an angel, a messenger of God, a spokesperson for him, and he tells her this news. This is her reaction to that news. Listen to what it says. This is in Luke chapter 1. Verses 46 to 54. Oh, how my soul praises the Lord. How my spirit rejoices in God the Savior. For he took notice of his lowly servant girl, and from now on all generations will call me blessed. For the Mighty One is holy, and he has done great things for me. He shows mercy from generation to generation to all who fear him. His mighty arm has done tremendous things. He has scattered the proud and haughty ones. He has brought down princes from the thrones and exalted the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away with empty hands. He has helped his servant Israel and remembered to be merciful, for he made this promise to our ancestors, to Abraham and his children, forever. That's normal, right? That's what you do when you find out you're pregnant. You sing a song like that. I know that's what my mom did when she found out she was pregnant with me. She broke out into a metered poem and sang. Any of you do that? Normal? Not normal. A little different, isn't it? That section's called the Magnificat, and it gets that title from the opening line, Magnify the Lord. And Magnificat is Latin for to magnify. And the Magnificat is like this love letter to God, to her son Jesus. But besides just breaking out in this metered poem, a prophetic song when she finds out she's pregnant, there's some other things about this that I think are a bit puzzling. First of all, why was she happy? She breaks into this song like this is good news, but boy, this is some tough news in a lot of ways. Pregnant? With no father? Before marriage? I mean, even today, that can be a very challenging situation. And at this time and place, it was a virtual ticket to poverty and to rejection for both her and her son. Why was she so happy? Why is she singing this epic song? I think it's because she understood true love. Her life is an example of true love. She can teach us something. So I'm up here saying stuff like true love. And I'm thinking, how do I put a sermon together about true love like I'm some kind of expert in true love? I know when someone is up talking about something and they say something like true love, that's when either people tune out or tune in and wait for the train wreck. I mean, I don't know if I'm actually qualified to talk about this. I'm definitely not overqualified to talk about this. True love? I, like you, probably do my best. When I talk about this subject, true love, it actually brings to mind immediately something. I don't know if it works, brings it to mind for you, but a movie that's about true love. Can anyone guess the movie I'm talking about? Princess Bride, of course. Like, I feel like I'm up here talking about a fairy tale. Right? Like, it's the best story of all times, right? Remember the boy didn't want to hear the story about true love because he thought there was going to be kissing and other things? And Wesley, the hero, he did everything for Buttercup, the princess. If you haven't seen this movie, you got to see it. It's a classic. And she told him to polish the saddle so she could see her face in it, and he just said, as you wish. It's kind of like my role at home. I mean, I just say, as you wish, when I'm polishing the car, whatever I do. But one thing I know about love that's like the Princess Bride, it's hard work. It's not the easy street. It's not the way that we always want to go. It feels like biking uphill against the wind. That's not fun. We generally have this idea that true love is like coasting down a sweet hill and it feels great and gains momentum and all you need to do is hang on for the ride. That true love arises from within and is a reaction that we just like. And when it comes to people, I just wish it was that easy. Because people are complex. It can be challenging. The people that say love is easy and they're just carried by the momentum of this deep well of emotions, I say, more power to you. Next time we do this, you can do the talk. But in my experience, true love is more like biking up a steep hill. It takes a lot of effort, and when you reach the top, you're breathless. You're out of breath. Mary teaches us how to love. She's a guide for us. With true love, there are some things that we can learn from her. And I hope that you leave here today challenged to love deeply and more freely and to love selflessly. This is what we see in her life and what she teaches us about what love is. Love is perspective. Love is giving. And love is joy and grief. Mary teaches us about true love because her love is put in the perspective of God's love and purposes. Why was she happy when she heard the news from the angel? Why did she think it was good news that she was pregnant with this baby? Why did she sing this song that's gone down as one of the greatest songs, greatest praise songs in history? Why? She's happy, she's rejoicing, because she knows that in bearing this child, in raising this son, she's participating in what God is doing, in his purposes. That's her perspective. Her love is true because it loves through the perspective of God's purposes. That's one of the lessons we learn about love from Mary. To truly love, we need to have an understanding of love that goes beyond our own needs and fulfillment. True love has perspective. And I think this is something that we have a lot of trouble with, perspective. Let me modify that statement a bit. Perspective is all fine, but godly perspective, that's the hard part, because I don't have any problem with my own perspective. Most of us have a perspective, and we know that perspective. See, I'm really good at seeing things from my perspective. It comes really naturally to me. Nobody can see things better from my perspective than I can. When I have a disagreement with someone, I naturally disagree from my perspective. And it's easy to see things from my perspective. And true love, it's about perspective, but not ours. It's about God's perspective. And godly perspective means listening to others and seeing others through God's purposes in life. And that is not easy. And I want to tell you that the key to fulfillment in life is living life beyond your own perspective and purposes and living for something beyond yourself. Mary teaches us about true love because her love is a giving love. Mary shows how to truly love because she knew that Jesus was never hers. She never owned him. He was not her possession. Think what it must have been like for Mary. She's carrying this promise in her belly. And this promise becomes a child, and the child becomes a man. And she learned and demonstrated that love is giving and releasing and letting go, not possessing. To love someone, you cannot possess them. You must let them go. Think what it must have been like for Mary as she grew in pregnancy. And the realization that this baby was her son probably grew and diminished as she went through her pregnancy. And when Jesus was born and grew, there was a mixed and mingled emotion of conflict, of his being her boy and not her boy. It would have been a tough world to navigate. And it couldn't have been easy being Jesus' mother. In all of her encounters with him, she is reminded that he loves her, but is not his and does not belong to her. And she has to come to terms with that from the beginning. He loved her like he loved everybody else, perfectly. But it was still like he loved everybody else. Even Mary couldn't have been too happy with Jesus' first miracle. The time she told him that the wine had run out at this wedding and went up to Jesus and asked for help. And he replied, "Woman, what would you have me do?" Like, who talks like that to their mother? Or the time the disciples came and told him his mother was waiting for him. And he said, "Who is my mother?" Not the greatest Mother's Day gift. And adding that whoever did the will of his Father in heaven was his mother. This would be some hard words as a mother. You almost get the idea that he felt he couldn't truly belong to anybody unless he somehow belonged equally to everybody. They were all his mothers, his brothers, his sisters. So she had to come to terms with this, that He was her child, but he was not hers. She didn't own him. She had to give him away. Release him to be himself. Release him to his work. And ultimately, she gave him up to the cross. She had to come to terms with that. And we learn from this that love isn't possessing, it's giving. When we love to possess, we do it for ourselves, and it isn't true love. When we love to release, to give, we do it for others, and that is true love. Mary shows us what true love is. True love means accepting that those we love are gifts, not possessions. And we cannot hold on to them. They need to be let go of. Do we like love? True love is about giving and releasing. Mary teaches us about true love because her love is a love of grief and joy. True love faces the possibility or reality of deep grief and is not broken by it, but is strengthened by it. And I need to admit that of the things I wanted to say today, I kept coming back to this one. Do I delete this point or do I include it? Because I don't quite know what to do with it. Except this is what Mary teaches us about love. Somehow there is a relationship between grief and joy and ultimately true love. Mary teaches us this. We don't really know if she truly understood at the beginning the fullness of suffering that Jesus would go through, but she knew it would be a hard road. Still, she joyfully and obediently rejoiced about bearing and raising the Savior of the world. That's the song she sang. Her life with Jesus was probably a life of mingled pain and joy. She's probably a woman of sorrow for the condition of the world. She saw how people reacted to her son. She heard the conversations behind his back. She heard the mutterings and the hatred of people opposed to Jesus. And I think she knew on some level that she would experience profound grief in this relationship with her son. We don't have records of special tender words that Jesus spoke to Mary. There is maybe one exception, although it's still not what we would expect. While he was hanging on the cross and still clinging to his life, he spoke to her. And in his pain, it probably took an excruciating effort to speak. He looked down from where they had nailed him, stretched out, and he pulled himself up and took a deep breath. And this is what he says. Dear woman, behold your son. Then he looks at the disciples and says something else. Here is your mother. I wonder what she felt to see her son there. Her heart broke. Her grief flowed like a river. She was a mother who knew grief. She must have felt it like no other. Because of her relationship with grief, she earned this fancy nickname that maybe you've heard, Mater Dolorosa, which means mother of suffering. And you see that in art, that she's referred to by that term. But she was not broken by that. She continues on. She was strong. She's a hero of faith. We read in the book of Acts, after the resurrection, she, along with the other disciples, met together in that famous prayer place that we call the upper room. This is in Acts 1:14. They all met together and were constantly united in prayer, along with Mary, the mother of Jesus, several other women, and the brother of Jesus. The pain didn't break her. The grief didn't break her. Mary was a person of true love. She shows us how to love. She had a perspective greater than her own. She had God's perspective. It didn't break her because she knew she never owned her son. She was willing to release him. And I observe here in her life that she is a woman of grief and joy. And both of those emotions spring from a deep, deep well of love. True love is having a relationship with grief mingled with joy. Because you have godly perspective towards life and those you love, because you have released those you love. She was also probably a woman of joy in a way that is only possible when people are deep friends with grief. She understood sorrow, so she understood joy. She understood loss, so she understood love. She understood motherhood. She understood that Jesus was not hers. I think the Christian writer Henry Nouwen helps us with this. He says that grief is actually a gift that teaches us how to love. And it can bring us to new heights of joy. He says that grief is joy's teacher. Going through grief makes life more precious. Going through grief gives definition and understanding to joy. Going through grief gives us the possibility and possibly the ability to love truly and deeply. Because we understand life and loss and the preciousness of the gift that people and relationships are. Somehow I feel that we instinctively understand this, even if it's just a little bit. Nobody likes funerals, but myself, probably like you, whenever I go to a funeral and grieve and remember, I leave that place with a renewed sense of the preciousness of my relationships. That happened to you too? Funerals remind us of that. Grief teaches us how to love deeply and truly. And these are hard words about love. Difficult words. Love is more than a sentiment and feeling. Mary shows us that joy and grief are both components of true love. Do we like love? True love is about love deepened by joy and grief. Mary is inspiring. She's a strong woman of faith and a role model to us all. And this is what we see in her life, what she teaches us that love is. Love is perspective. Love is giving. Love is joy and grief. So may we say to God, according to his purposes, as you wish. May we love deeply enough to let go and give away. May we go through grief and tough times, through the fire swamps of life, and come out with renewed joy and deeper love. Love is not easy. It's not safe, but it is good.
Thank you, Kevin. I know that was your perspective, but just thank you for that picture of even what Mary went through. I think sometimes we do tend to think of her just at Christmas time, and especially in a Baptist church, so thank you for that. Would you please stand and join us as we close our worship service this morning?
to everlasting, you are God. Everlasting, to everlasting, you are God. In holiness you stand secure through culture's shifting sands, unchanged by all the vanities of man. And as the nations rise and fall, your sovereignty remains. You are the one true God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. In faithfulness, your love extends through times of turbulence, adopting those who call upon your name. Every generation joins in songs of grateful praise. You are the one true God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting everlasting, you are God. Eternal, immortal, invisible God. Eternal, immortal, invisible God. Everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God.
So let's go from here and show the world that we love God and love others. Let us love as a perspective. And when God calls us, we say, as you wish. And when life hits us with grief, we rejoice with joy and we love deeply. Let us go and be a people of love.